This is 69, the podcast. I'm Dave Haynes. 69 has been covering the digital signage industry since the dawn of man, first online and now as a podcast. This podcast gives me the time to really talk to people about technology and issues, get past the PR and jargon, and into what stuff actually means. I try to help listeners understand why they should care. The podcasts are free and I try to get a new one out weekly, but I travel a lot so sometimes I'll miss a week. The 69 podcast has been gratefully sponsored and supported since the start by Jeremy Gavin and the fine folks at ScreenFeed, the digital signage content store. ScreenFeed makes beautiful looking, totally automated content for signage and digital out-of-home networks. Check them out at screenfeed.com. I was scrolling my way through my LinkedIn feed recently when I stumbled across a post from a guy who said he was the inventor of the term digital signage, with a bio photo that showed him holding a bottle of champagne that was about the size of a golf bag. Clearly, I needed to talk to this guy. So Neil Longay-Higgins and I got on a podcast call the other day to talk about his coining the term digital signage. Turns out he kind of adapted it from someone outside the industry who was looking at a video wall and didn't really know what to call it, so he called it a digital sign. He's been around Pro AV and digital signage for some 30 years, so we talked about the early days and challenges. We also got more broadly into what he does, running sales for a company west of London called the LED Studio. That company specs, designs, manufactures, rolls out and manages large format LED displays, including a new micro LED video wall product that competes with the big boys of the display business. All right, Neil, thank you for joining me. We've not met, but I was intrigued by what I saw in your LinkedIn bio that I stumbled across that said you're the guy who invented the term or coined the term digital signage. So it's your fault.
Well, I'd like to think so. some people may disagree. It was many, many years ago when I was running a video wall company in the UK, and everybody used barcode monitors and electrosonic projection cubes, but no one was using them to advertise anything. And we ended up putting some small barcode monitor walls in 20 or 30 shopping centers in the UK. And we just called them video walls. There was no mystery to them. But then one day I had a phone call from a security guard who, it was a weekend, and he said, your digital sign is broken. And I said, what are you talking about? I think you've got the wrong number. He said, no, your digital sign. And I thought he was talking about a neon or something. And, right. And then he went, no, the one with all the pictures on it. And I suddenly went, oh, okay, oh, the video screen. He said, yeah. And I actually thought about that after he'd made the call, and I kind of thought, digital sign. So we started to promote it as digital signage for advertising. And the name stuck internally, and then some of the people at the suppliers would start to use it. And it just kind of picked up from then. And I forgot about it for such a long time. And then eventually it kind of came round, and people would ask for digital signage. And it was a few people back in the day remember it.
It's interesting because it's a term that has been debated really since it started to gain any kind of common usage. And people would say, well, that's not the best thing. That puts it in a narrow box. It should be called dynamic digital signage, or it should be place-based media or on-premise, or just all these different things. I've forgotten all the different terminology that's been suggested. Do you think it really matters as somebody who's been around it this long?
I don't think it does, to be honest, but it does great when people use something I'm not familiar with, or they seem to dream a new thing up just for the sake of it. I mean, the classic buzzword at the moment is direct view LED. Well, All LED has been direct view from the very first one. You know, you don't look at it via a mirror or anything. And I think LG coined the phrase initially to differentiate internally between their LCD screens that were backlit by LED. But it seems to be something that's kind of picked on now. I prefer the phrase true LED, but it's like different countries and regions have different ideas. People will call an ordinary LED screen a video wall when technically it's not. But people know what you mean. As long as people understand what you're talking about, that's fine.
Why do you prefer true LED?
I just think direct view, it describes nothing. It would be like saying your television at home is a direct view television.
Yeah, don't sneak up on it from the side.
Yeah. It'll spot you these days, and it'll already be recording you. That's probably for sure.
Yeah, it's interesting because LG would be one of those companies that caused the problem to begin with by marketing LED TVs when there were LCDs, but they had LED backlight arrays.
Yeah, I think they, you know, we always try and call something new, you know, with micro LED and mini LED, and people will come up with different names for stuff to try and make it unique to them. And, you know, that's what the marketing of all products is about, to try and make something unique and get the buzzword out there.
Mm-hmm. How long have you been around, quote unquote, video walls and digital signage generally?
In the early, late 80s, early 90s, I was with a video company called ProQuip, and that ended up being one of the largest video wall companies in the world, and went throughout the 90s and got very, very big. And at the end of that company, we were looking at the beginning of LED. What I like about being in the business so long is seeing some of the people who initially worked with me as kind of junior technicians and things. They're now senior people within the industry, and that's good. And also some of the designers and people I worked with, they are now stalwarts of the industry, and they've designed a lot of LED screens and things like that.
So the video wall network that you're putting in shopping malls, that was for advertising?
Yes, it was. It was called Center Network Television, and it was a great idea, but the costs of it and the reliability, it was too far ahead of its time, because we were recording things initially on Philips Laserdisc, which was very expensive. It was about £1,500 back then to get a single disc press.
Wow.
And then we moved on to the Sony CRV discs, but they suffer from, you know, all the dust and the bad environment of shopping centres and things. And even the, you know, the original CRT Barco screen technology, you know, you used to have to stick your hand in the back initially to colour balance it. it was dangerous stuff. And I'm glad the technology has moved on, but I think, you know, if we'd have been able to have flat screens and a memory stick back then, I think it would have really taken off. But it was the cost of doing it was hard.
So compared to today, to do the same physical footprint of a video wall in that kind of an environment, would it, if you were doing LED now, would it cost less than this did at that time, or would it be kind of a parity?
It would cost less now. And, you know, one of the things was changing content. You could only afford to have a new Laserdisc pressed once a month. And then you had to go around and physically change that content. And now we just take for granted that you'll just upload it via the cloud to, you know, via whatever CMS system. And, you know, that was just not even thought of back then.
And you had to cross your fingers that the Laserdisc player was going to last, right?
Yeah, they were forever falling over.
They would last, what, like 3,000 hours maybe?
Oh, if we were very, very lucky.
Oh, Lord. So you would have a tech out there like every 3 months or something, switching out a box?
Yeah, it was, I mean, you would try and be a little bit proactive on things and you know, remove them and clean them and et cetera. But the housings that were made were fairly basic. And whereas they had vents for, you know, keeping the monitors cool, all the rubbish would get sucked in there. And, LaserDisc was never going to be a format for long-term use.
So if you're thinking back to the late 90s, what were the technologies that you were praying would come along that would make your life easier?
Well, I think when it came to the conversion of someone's advert to put onto any format, you know, we always wanted a digital video player, and it did happen in that time. And I remember thinking, you know, I don't really understand this, because there's not a disc spinning around or videotape running along. Where's the image coming from? But it was early hard drives done by, I think it was Digital Video Systems with Peter Topping, developed one of the early ones. And, you know, that was the first big step to moving forward.
And then I guess the next one would be, well, really internet, but just high-speed connectivity, so you could actually send a file out instead of driving it over.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, that's key, as it is with all systems these days. You've got to have that network around you, or that intranet. And with that, the world is your oyster, really.
Mm-hmm. So you're now with a UK company called LED Studio running their sales?
That's correct. LED Studio, we're celebrating our 10th year at the moment. It's one of the world's best kept secrets. We are based in Swindon. We have a very large facility there. And we have our own brand of LED screens called VOD Visual. And we, a lot of our business is OEM for other brand names. Mm-hmm. We do white label for a lot of the UK integrators. But we are this year starting to kind of promote ourselves as a proper brand, because we, you know, our technology is quite far advanced of many other people. We've just introduced quite a few new products that are, you know, groundbreaking in the industry, and people are suddenly going, ah, we should have been watching these guys. We're trying to catch up.
I mean, it's a challenging industry to be in, because there are so many companies selling roughly the same thing. How do you cut through all that?
It's your product that speaks, really. In the LED industry, everybody has over the last few years self-declared themselves as experts. We actually have experts. So the owner of our company is an expert. He designs the screens. And we look at things in a different way. We try and keep LED simple. We try and keep it economical. And we just don't like to overcomplicate things. So whereas if you were to touch Samsung's The Wall screen, for example, you'll feel it's very hot. You won't burn your hand on it, but it's, you know, it makes you think, well, it shouldn't be like that. So we've designed screens that run very cold. They have heat sinks to take the heat away from the LED. And that gives you a better lifespan. It gives you much better color stability. And we just think that's obvious things that people are missing. But, you know, there are so many screens churned out of small Chinese factories. I mean, Shenzhen back in the day was, you know, half a dozen companies, and now it's a big town or a city with thousands of manufacturers. So, you know, there's no, they take no prisoners. They copy everything. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's good in some ways because technology moves on, but it means that every time you bring out something new, you only have a certain period with it while it is new.
Yeah, I mean, that's a challenge in that. I would think in a lot of countries, when you see a brand like LED Studio, it would be reasonable to assume that, okay, these guys are a reseller of some white labeled product out of Shenzhen that you know, they're just getting contract manufactured, but it's really a, you know, Happy Sunshine 888 LED or whatever, as opposed to something that was originally designed. But you're saying you guys do the engineering design to your specifications and then get it contract manufactured overseas somewhere?
We have our own factory, and everything is designed in the UK. We have we're just about to be awarded Made in UK status. So obviously the factories have to be in China because that's where the supply chain is. But once things are made there, you know, the first part of the assembly, PCBs and things are done. They all screens come to the UK for final testing and assembly. So by doing that, and normally in non-COVID times, our CEO spends 2 weeks of the month in China overseeing, you know, quality control and the manufacturing. And that's been very difficult at the moment, but looking to get back out there very soon, hopefully.
And there's a huge, I've been to China, I've been to Shenzhen. There's a huge range of manufacturers from, you know, Intel level clean room kinds of facilities to open window facilities where there's, I remember one place where there were ducks walking outside and like, you know, there were no controls at all. There's dust flying around the whole bit. So it must be difficult to try to do this without going there and keeping an eye on things.
Yeah. I mean, we often have, you know, some of the staff from China over in the UK. And so there's normally a kind of fairly good fluid exchange of people. And that's what really, you know, where we win on things like that. Also, a lot of our business is OEM. So those people will check us out very, very thoroughly. And, you know, we wouldn't get the work if we were another one of those little companies.
Hi, I'm Jeremy Gavin, CEO of ScreenFeed. Now, I'm not put off by the fact that you're not listening to this podcast to hear me. Just like audiences to any digital signage, you give your attention to content you find interesting or helpful. That's where my company ScreenFeed comes in. Our sole mission is to make your digital signage network more valuable by making content that is more valuable to your audience. If you'd like to drive more attention to your screens, visit ScreenFeed.com to explore the 75-plus content options we've created to do just that. And then give us a call. Now, back to the podcast.
You have to compete with big multinational brands like a Samsung, an LG, all the way to very specific LED brands like a Layard and Unilim and an Absen and those kinds of guys. How do you compete with them when they have the marketing muscle that you can only really dream about?
I think that's the difficult thing. I mean, you know, Samsung and that, they have absolutely millions of marketing and advertising spend, and it's all too easy with certain projects for them to step in and say, you know, well, we'll give you some advertising and whatever, and that can, you know, bring their price down effectively. So you can't compete with that, but we compete with the fact that we believe we have a better product. You know, it's lighter, it's more economical, it has newer technology in it. And that's where we win. You know, people who come to see us, they are quite amazed, and, you know, they see the passion that's in the company for LED screens.
Is the buying audience more mature?
I think it's still pretty split. I mean, you know, there are the kind of high-powered buyers that people would like to be talking to. But, you know, it's a massive market. You can, you know, over the years, I've had, you know, receptionists who've been tasked with finding that company's digital solution for the next 5 years. And, you know, what will start as a telephone call from someone who knows nothing about it can end up someone spending millions. So, you know, you can never discount anything. The verticals in this business are everywhere. There's, you know, the sports, the retails, et cetera, et cetera. And there's always someone you've never heard of who could spend a lot of money with you.
Mm-hmm. When LED really started to get some traction in the pro AV marketplace, I would say is like maybe 5 years ago, 4 or 5 years ago, when you started to see fine pitch product come along, and everything was marketed around the pixel pitch. That was it. It was like, that's how you distinguish products. And it seems to have moved on from there, and buyers are more discerning, and they're looking at contrast levels and, you know, energy efficiency and all kinds of things.
Yeah. I mean, energy efficiency is probably one of the most important things at the moment. We have a billboard that we've designed called the Fusion. It's the most economical outdoor screen on the market. Whereas in the UK, a typical 48 sheet, that's 6 meters by three, would cost about £10,000 or £8,000 to £10,000 a year to actually run just on the electricity. The way our screens work now, that's down to about £2,000 to £3,000. So it's a 70% saving by designing a better screen.
And I suspect that that's not widely known, is it? That people think LED, so therefore it's automatically an energy miser, but they kind of forget that there are thousands or millions of these little lights.
Yeah, absolutely. And just going back to what I said earlier there, you know, the older type of screens, lots of fans in, that's very uneconomical. They get very hot. Lots of screens still run very hot. So you know they're not, you know, efficient. And it's down to, you know, getting the LEDs themselves to work as cool as possible. And, you know, that gives you the quality and the lifespan. I mean, we offer warranties of up to 7 years on some of our products. So, you know, you don't get that if you buy a cheap screen out of China.
Mm-hmm. And a cheap screen out of China might look good on the trade show floor at ISE because they've spent 2 days color balancing and optimizing the thing, but it's not going to last that way, is it?
No, definitely not. I mean, we walk around ISE and we see we have our screens on quite a few stands there. And they're normally set up pretty well, but it's a minefield out there between a screen being built and a, let's just say, an AV company in the UK importing that and installing it. They normally won't have the correct equipment to color balance and things like that. But if you buy a good quality screen, I mean, I can't say the name of the company. We're putting some screens all over the world at the moment, and they're coming straight from our factory, and they're going straight into retail units. They just work. They don't need color balancing. They don't need lots of setup. It's plug and play. Mm-hmm. Whereas we try and make it simple, so a stand builder can just put a screen in.
Mm-hmm. I've made the observation in the last several months that I see LED as now being a mainstream product, whereas I thought it was a niche going back, you know, a couple of years and further back than that. But it seemed when you start to see it in pubs and on the sides of fairly nondescript buildings and things like that, it's entered the mainstream. It's no longer something that's worthy of a press release when somebody puts one up.
Yeah, it's, you know, you see them everywhere. Some people think there's too much signage. I certainly don't agree with that. Mm-hmm. But yeah, they are becoming mainstream, but we are looking at a stage where a true LED screen will be in your home in 5 years. Samsung and LG announced that they were kind of pulling back from the LCD market because the technology was moving on in pixel pitch and that in LED. And it won't be that long before, you know, your 55-inch screen in your living room is true LED. I mean, we've just made a 55-inch cabinet, which is the largest cabinet you can buy, to replace the LCD video wall. Mm. It's so there's, you know, it's variable pixel pitch, and so depending on your budget, whether you're retail or a control room where you need, you know, really high resolution or whatever, you know, it's something that is lightweight, cheaper to run, and it lasts twice as long as LCD. You know, if an LCD goes wrong, you tend to throw it away. That's not very green.
But the problem, at least for now, is it's probably also wickedly expensive, right?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, at the fine pixel pitch of, you know, 0.7s, 0.4s and what have you, it's crazy money. But that's true of everything. You know, it's a bit like when they say about computer memory, it halves in price and doubles in size every year. Mm-hmm. And it's a similar sort of scenario with LED.
Do you, I assume you're talking about micro LED and less so about mini LED. Do you see the market moving to micro?
Yes, it does. We've recently introduced the Vivid Micro LED, and that's proving really popular with kind of high-end installs for both home and the office. It's a product that, you know, people have always been chasing resolution. And although everybody wants their screen to be 4K, most people don't run any 4K content on it. Mm-hmm. But yeah, that's the future. Micro LED will get bigger and bigger.
And at what point does it become something that doesn't give people heart attacks when they see the price?
I think realistically, 4 to 5 years will, you know, see that price come down. You know, there will always be cheaper alternatives. And, you know, even now you get some people who will, you know, buy a TV that costs them 20 grand in their house. Others are quite satisfied with something that's £200. So that, you know, there will always be two different markets, but they will start to merge definitely over the next few years.
Do you see much demand coming for, I don't want to say alternative, but maybe unconventional LED platforms like LED on glass, on film, these mesh displays, that sort of thing?
Yeah, there's a few different things that are in the pipeline. I mean, we already have things like the mesh and the transparent screens and things like that. And some of those are on glass and some are on a more kind of you know, structural format. But I think where there's always something new that will pop up, someone has an idea. I don't know where the future will be of it. I think, you know, whatever format we end up with, I mean, eventually receive cards and sending cards will disappear and things will merge. And they, you know, as it becomes a consumer product, that's, I think, when we'll get some big changes.
I realize we're in nutty times with COVID and everything, but I'm curious where you're seeing demand and where you expect demand to come as life normalizes.
I think they are the traditional markets. You know, sport will always be a big thing. We've got the virtual studio, and in filming, that's getting very popular now, and
yeah,
there's, you know, like 70 odd big studios in construction around the world, and they're all wanting the next big thing. We're trying to develop that at the moment, and hopefully by certainly the end of this year we will have a new product in that marketplace. that will, again, change the face of it. But until, you know, all these things really get going, I mean, retail is a classic example where it's, you know, there's no money there at the moment. The high street is pretty dead. So not many people can afford to put LED in their whole estate, but quite a few people will do it in their, you know, their premier stores and things like that. So that there's still a big market there, as we're seeing with more people working away from the office or smaller offices. They're having more meeting rooms with better quality, you know, video links and screens to go with that. So that market is coming up. Even, you know, as LCD gradually fades away, there, you know, that will be replaced with other markets. I mean, digital menu boards and things like that, at the moment, it's only an LCD market, but that will change as well.
You are, you've been running a LinkedIn messaging campaign, kind of coordinated with London Digital Signage Week, which I think is next week.
Yes, it is. Yeah.
Where you're saying, I think somewhat cheekily, we'll pick you up in a giant Texas-sized stretch limousine and show you around some of London's best LED installations. Is that a serious attempt?
Not really showing the stuff in London. We're based outside of London in Swindon.
Okay.
But we are, in a couple of months, we're opening a London showroom in Paddington. But at the moment, trying to get people who, you know, are not really traveling a lot from London to Swindon has become harder. So I've put the offer out there that we will send a car for you. It'll pick you up, take you back. You can have some refreshments on the way. And we're hoping that'll take people out of the smoke and into the fields.
Mm-hmm. And for those who don't live in the UK, where the heck is Swindon?
It's west of London, about an hour.
Oh, okay.
So it's not far, really.
So you could take a train out there, but if somebody wants to take you in a nice hired car, then even better.
Absolutely, yeah.
All right, Neil, thank you so much for spending some time with me.
Brilliant. It's been really good to chat, Dave.
That's it for this week's episode. I hope you enjoyed it and you learned a thing or two. If you're new to 16.9, it's a podcast that's been around since 2016. You can click around the site and find scores of conversations with smart industry folks. If you're new to digital signage, you need to be reading 16.9. That's at 16-9.net. You'll find thousands of posts by me and expert guest writers about this industry. I don't run a press release republishing mill. If something makes it on 16.9, that means it matters in some way to the business. Everything about 16.9 is free. Great sponsors make my work possible, and one of those is podcast sponsor ScreenFeed. Check them out at screenfeed.com. 16.9 is a product of Vertical Media Consulting Group, the massive media empire I run out of a spare room in my house, now located outside Halifax, Nova Scotia, on the east coast of Canada. Thanks for listening. I'm Dave Haynes.